From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 18th day of July, 2022. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's with AgMarket.net. A bit later in the program, we'll discuss the weather forecast too with Mark Russo of Everstream Analytics. And along the way, we'll hear about the trials and tribulations of the developing marijuana business in the state of Illinois right here on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
September corn today at $6.12 and a quarter, finished 8 cents higher. December at $6.10 and 3/4, up 7. August soybeans, 31 and a quarter at $14.97 and a quarter, the settlement price higher, that is. November at $13.80, up 38 cents. Bean meal up $3.50. The bean oil, $3.12 higher. Wheat futures for the day, up 36 cents in the soft red. The hard red up 36 and a half, and live cattle futures in Chicago finished the lead up a dollar and a nickel. Feeders were 32 and a half cents higher, and lean hogs were up $1.77 and a half. We're now joined by Kurt Kimmel. He's at agmarket.net out of Normal, Illinois. Thank you so much, Kurt, for being with us, and congratulations on a new era. Agmarket.net has purchased Bates Commodities, which began in the mid-1970s and has a history that goes back through all the old Heinold Hog Group from 1917 and Heinold Commodities through the 60s. So just a fantastic thing to watch a new era develop and for you to be there with it.
Well, thank you, Todd. Yeah, it's quite an exciting adventure. We've known Matt Bennett for many of years. In fact, his folks had the Windsor Elevator and cleared their hedging through Bates Commodities at one time. Then, too, Matt himself was in a branch office of Bates Commodities. So there's some deep history on both sides of the equation here. We're quite excited about it. Been quite impressed over the last week or two getting down to actually seeing the ins and outs of what they do. They've got the technology there. They've got the backing in through there. And they have the John Stewart Associate, JSA, and they're just huge on the commercial side. So we're quite excited about it, and we're quite excited we'll be able to provide a lot more information and technology to our customers and listeners throughout the Midwest here.
Well, I can hardly wait to hear what you see from JSA and that commercial side. In fact, I'm wanting to know why this market is a bit higher today, and frankly, I was out last week, so what you can bring me up to speed on over the last 6 or 7 days.
Well, you're quite lucky you were out of the office. For us guys who like to be optimistic, it was just plain brutal. Couldn't really see the significance of the break there, but it was just a student body left and quite a bit of commodity fund long liquidation. The forecast was not quite as threatening at that time. And then, too, the forecast was just a little bit better at that time, and the funds were just liquidating due to the sell signals materializing left and right. But since then, though, we were able to bottom. We pretty well had the market liquidate, and we're in a position now where we're adding some weather premium back in. Weather maps showing a warmer, drier forecast here for the next 2 weeks, but it's just not only here in the U.S., it's also in Europe. As you watch the evening news tonight, you'll see maybe stories on it's so hot, it's melting this and melting that and frying eggs on sidewalks, and so they're experiencing some warm, dry conditions. And so that's put a little premium into the marketplace. Then also, too, the outside news as far as market news. Energy market was able to stabilize crude oil up over $4 to $5 a barrel here today. The metals were able to stabilize. So maybe we've seen a little bit of investor confidence, consumer confidence come back into the marketplace. This morning's export shipments, pretty well aligned. We saw good corn shipments, 42 million bushels. Beans was routine at 13 million bushels. So we're shipping out what we've sold. Now, the key will be this afternoon's crop conditions report, of course. Every Monday afternoon, we'll see what they say. Earlier, the trade was looking at maybe some slight improvement. But for those areas that's been missing the rain, there's quite a bit of deterioration there. So this afternoon, they're looking for corn conditions as a nation, 63% good to excellent. versus 64% last week. And there's a wide range, 61 to 67 is the trade range on that. Soybeans, they're expected to come in at 62% good to excellent versus 62% last week as a nation, and they've got a wide range of 59 to 65% good to excellent, Todd.
Well, speaking of areas that have not had rainfall, last Thursday, I did do one show last week. That was Commodity Week. By the way, Matt Bennett was on it. It was a very good show. John Zanker from Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette was there as well. He said that his area there around Lafayette was not very good at this point. I suppose there are other places, but they're out west, I think, at this time. What are you hearing about the good and bad spots across the Corn Belt?
Yeah, it's kind of hit and miss in the east, but you get west of the Mississippi River. It's kind of a dire situation there. As you move north, it's kind of hit and miss. But as you watch the weather maps, the Omega, the ridge there, the moisture's riding the ridge. Here in Illinois, locally, we've kind of been spoon-fed in some areas, but you get just north of us up towards LaSalle, Peru, and some areas in there, they've missed some rain. There's some areas not too far from Champaign County there that's kind of missed it. So far, we're kind of okay, but this is an important week or two here for pollination. A lot of tassels are out, and the water needs are very, very high. And also, too, we're seeing a situation where this wind continues to blow, keeping that evaporation rate high. But, yeah, there's some areas that's received 1, 2, 3 inches, but there's areas that's only received 1, 2, 3 tenths. And so it's going to vary a lot across the eastern belt here.
Yeah, you and I are looking forward to having Dan Zwicker with us on Thursday of this week. Those who've been with us for a long time will recognize Dan's name. He'll join us for Commodity Week. Dan always looks at some fun things, and I bet he'll talk about this solar flare that is headed towards the earth as well. So all kinds of fun commodity stuff coming up, and we sure look forward to having you and Dan and Wayne Nelson with us for our Commodity Week program. I think Paul Cooley may join us for that one too, so it should be fun.
Oh, wow. Looking forward to it. It's always an exciting venture with Dad. You just never know which way the conversation is going to go, but there's a wealth of knowledge there. It'd be great to visit with Paul, get caught up with him also. Looking forward to seeing you all on Thursday there for that recording.
Yeah, and again, congratulations on agmarket.net. Looking forward to talking with you with that moniker for a few more years to come, I bet.
You bet. We're excited about it, and we'll provide, I think, a lot more neat information, the commercial side, just as a hint here. It feels there's a lot of support under the corn market here at 550. They got a lot of commercial buyers that's interested at the lower levels here.
That's what we needed to know. That, of course, is Kurt Kimmel. He is with agmarket.net out of Normal, Illinois. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Listen to us online on demand at willag.org or find us in your favorite podcast applications, places like Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, and even Spotify. Up next, something just a little bit different. Over the last couple of years, you've heard me report on the development of marijuana and CBD oil in particular as a potential cash crop for farmers in the state of Illinois. It's very regulated and in its infancy as a business model in the state of Illinois across the whole of the United States. One of the largest issues remains banking because the United States government has not yet approved growing marijuana across the whole of the U.S. Not all states have approved it either. And because the banking system is federal, it's very hard for folks to get loans to start raising marijuana as a business. Today, we're going to look at it from a slightly different angle with Illinois Public Media reporter Emily Hayes. She went about reporting on this recently from a very, very local and very, very cultural perspective.
You came like right before harvest.
Lisa Palmgren had hoped to co-own one of the new cannabis shops.
If anything, it's been increased hardships trying to pursue it legally.
There's a heavy, grassy smell in Palmgren's basement in Peoria, where she legally grows cannabis for her own medical use. Some of the plants are coated in a white dust, a sign that they are almost ripe, Palmgren says. She started growing cannabis to manage her migraines before Illinois legalized medical marijuana, and she faced harsh consequences in 2011. One of her children opened the door to a plainclothes police officer. After the officer found her cannabis plants, her husband served time in jail on repeat possession charges. Their children were separated from them by the Illinois Department of Children and Family Services. Palmgren says she's grateful DCFS placed her children at her parents' house.
They got to go someplace that was comfortable to them. But it also still, you know, tore us apart. This was an empty house. Sorry, it's hard to talk about sometimes.
When the Illinois General Assembly voted to legalize recreational cannabis in 2019, legislators limited licenses to existing medical marijuana businesses and a new category of businesses called social equity applicants. To qualify, a business has to be majority owned by people who have been arrested on marijuana charges, whose family member was arrested, or who live in an area disproportionately impacted by such arrests. Palmgren's experience qualifies her for a social equity license, but she's had trouble getting one. A local physician offered her a spot on his dispensary application team, but the deal fell through.
Essentially, like 2 weeks before the application was going in, and at that point, we couldn't scramble fast enough.
Democrat LaShawn Ford represents Chicago's District 8 in the Illinois House of Representatives. He says legislators want to repair harm caused by earlier laws against marijuana.
War on drugs. Too many black people were locked up.
While there isn't a race component to the social equity application, African Americans have been disproportionately incarcerated for drug crimes. According to the ACLU, before legalization, a black Illinoisan was over 7 times as likely to be arrested for marijuana possession as a white person, despite similar consumption habits. Meanwhile, 92% of the dispensaries operating in Illinois are owned by white people, according to the state.
The intent of the law was to make sure that people that were hardest hit by the war on drugs had an opportunity to be in the business, and that the communities that were hardest hit were able to use the revenue to rebuild the communities.
Some of the people running social equity businesses are the same white men who ran the industry before. The law just requires a different ownership structure now.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Would you want to introduce yourself?
Sure. I'm Brad Zerman. I'm the CEO of Seven Point.
Seven Point will be Danville's first social equity pot shop. Zerman is a longtime entrepreneur from the Detroit suburbs. He's run ATM and payment processing businesses since the early 1990s. He pivoted to the medical marijuana industry in 2014 and set up a shop in Oak Park in the Chicago suburbs. He could have been grandfathered into a recreational license, but instead he sold that business and applied for a social equity license for Seven Point.
So who owns besides you? Or are you one of the ones who qualify?
I'm not. So we have, I think there's 7 social equity partners that make up the 51%.
Vanessa Dotson is one of those partners.
I love the things that marijuana does for people. I'm an advocate of it. I feel like if you can have a cocktail, you can have a smoke, whatever makes you feel better. And it has a lot of good health reasons. So I want it all in.
She managed the restaurant next to Zerman's Oak Park dispensary, and they eventually became friends. When he started Seven Point, he asked Dotson to join.
Kind of opened the door for me for that one. Definitely don't think I would have any other time. It's kind of hard getting your foot in that door.
At the time, the application for a license was complicated and expensive. Applicants had to pay $2,500 up front, provide pages of documents, and there was no guarantee of being approved. I asked Zerman, who is white, whether businesses like his do what lawmakers intended. Does this kind of co-ownership help African-American communities recover from disproportionate marijuana arrests?
We're going to make a lot of people from disadvantaged areas, including a lot of minorities, millionaires. That's seemingly the goal, right? So, like, to me, that's like my job.
Lawsuits from applicants who didn't win a license have held up the entire social equity process for the last 2 years. The litigants settled the case in May, and the state's first social equity dispensaries could start operating this year. Zerman expects to break ground on Seven Point in the spring. In response to public pressure, the state has also simplified the dispensary applications to make it easier for people like Dotson and Palmgren to stand up businesses on their own. The application is now a simple online form with a $250 fee. Back in Peoria, Lisa Palmgren is still trying to get into the industry. She applied for a license to grow cannabis commercially, but was told she didn't end up qualifying for the lottery.
I'm kind of speculating here, but I think it had to do with having like health benefits in place, 401k, and like all of these things you were going to offer your employees. And we definitely couldn't commit to something like that. We feel as though if that's the reason that we lost the points, that it was a barrier to entry.
She's now filed a lawsuit in order to appeal the decision and find out what was missing in her application to grow cannabis. I'm Emily Hayes, Illinois Newsroom.
There are a couple of things that I found of interest in that story. The race component I found of interest, especially that data point, which talked about the background use of marijuana within both white and black populations being roughly the same, but incarceration not even close. And secondly, where we started, or at least where I started and primed you on this story with the banking system and the federal regulations, which would not permit folks mostly to get loans anywhere in the United States because of the federal regulatory issues. And then that comes back into the ATM and, while it wasn't said, the payday loan issues that might be involved as well. All of these things surround the development of this alternative crop in the state of Illinois across the whole of the U.S. that really looks to be a pretty good business model for some producers. I've been to field days that were operated both by Illinois Extension and know that some work is being done on hybrids and trying to figure out best management practices in the field. So this really is an option that some folks are looking at, and it does require some thought. And I'm glad that Emily Hayes from Illinois Public Media took the time to think it through and tell us about it. On this Monday, let's check with Mark Russo. He is at Everstream Analytics. Thanks, Mark, for being with us for the day. Let's get started in the Midwest. Can you recount the last week or so with me? I was not here to talk about the weather, but there was rainfall across a large part of the Corn Belt. How much and how widespread was it?
Yeah, well, we estimated that over the past week or so, or at least through yesterday on Sunday, that about half of the Midwest picked up significant amounts. That was focused, though, more so in the central and eastern Midwest, kind of in around the Mississippi River and then eastward. So then much of Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio really fared best with these rainfall opportunities the past week or so.
And then the next week, what happens?
Yeah, going forward now, we are seeing at least less opportunities across more of the belt, not just in the east. Well, not just in the eastern belt, but the western belt. And so, looking ahead here, at least the driest region or driest portion of the belt will continue to be the western belt. Whereas in the eastern belt, there are some opportunities for rain, but at this time, at least overall, you know, rainfall amounts and coverage aren't going to be quite as high as, you know, what occurred here in recent days across the eastern belt.
Any concern about the temperatures overnight or daytime?
Yeah, we do have some concerns mainly out across the western third or so of the Midwest, and then that extends into the plains where the hottest temperatures are going to be, temperatures climbing into the upper 90s and the hundreds, and even some of that does extend into the northern Delta region coming up later on this week and over the weekend. So for any of the corn that will be going through pollination with those temperatures into the upper 90s and then 100s, obviously produce some significant stress during the day. And then even overnight temperatures will be elevated, readings in the 70s, even some 80s in some of the plains states here coming up. So limiting that kind of, you know, overnight relief from the heat.
Any indication of what the last week of July, possibly the first few days of August, will look like?
Yeah, we are expecting here some relief into next week, although some variability with temperatures as well. The reason for that is this ridge of high pressure continues to move from the Four Corners region out into the plains and into the northern delta at times. And so for much of next week, mainly mid to end of next week, it looks like the ridge kind of moves back over the Rockies from the plains and northern delta. So that'll help cool things down a bit. But some of the far western Corn Belt and the plains still looks to stay hot at that time as well.
Expectations early in the year were for a very active hurricane season. Has that not come yet to fruition?
It still is early here, Todd. The hurricane season extends from June all the way through the end of November. And we've actually in the Atlantic Basin with three named storms already. That is a little bit ahead of schedule. The main time frame here coming up to watch is going to be once we get into August and September. And the peak of the season is August, September, and October. And so continue to expect an active season and active kind of peak of the season coming up. So it's still early, and kind of the macro variables, the warm waters in the Gulf of Mexico and Atlantic and this kind of La Nina base state we're seeing globally just continue to point in an active direction here for the tropical season.
Does that mean a wetter end to the summer in the Corn Belt?
Not necessarily. That could spell wetter conditions in places such as the Delta or southeastern U.S. Whether the Midwest is involved comes down to the track of tropical systems, especially later in September and on into October. So something to watch. But in general, late summers and falls, if we continue to have this La Nina base state, actually limits any kind of, you know, wetter end to the season here in the Midwest.
In Europe, things are forecast to be very hot this week. How dire?
Yeah, they've already begun to heat up in areas of Western Europe in recent days, record-setting temperatures, and some all-time July records being broken in countries like Spain and France, and likely will be England here today and tomorrow. And so these readings, you know, again, record-setting. The peak heat is the next couple of days before there's some easing. But overall, much of Europe, including southeastern Europe, will be involved with this heat for much of the next week to 10 days. And also with that, will be drier than normal conditions. And again, for this is peak of pollination for Europe corn, and the timing here is obviously problematic for that.
Is there a change after this heat dissipates? Does it get much cooler or just go back to more normal temperatures?
There's some easing of temperatures projected here right at month's end here, Todd. But beyond that, there are indications that some of the heat begins to build back up across more of Europe again. So right now, looking kind of more of the same and ultimately, you know, maintaining crop stressful weather here longer.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Todd.
That's Mark Russo. He is with Everstream Analytics. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Medium. It is public radio for the farming world. Find us online. Listen to us on demand anytime you'd like at willag.org, willag.org. Actually, one of the easiest things to do is to check us out in your favorite podcast applications, places like Apple Podcast and Spotify, Google Podcast, Amazon Music, Audible, and many, many more. Just search your favorite podcast application for the Closing Market Report, Commodity Week, and even the Illinois Nutrient Loss Reduction Podcast. Our theme music for the day is produced and performed in courtesy of Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.